Welcome to the podcast, everyone, and my guest, Scott Wolf, longtime USC writer for the LA Daily News. Thought I would check in with Scott, given the hype surrounding the Trojans this season. I figured I'd ask Scott part of a conversation. I'd ask Scott to play devil's advocate a little bit and maybe walk us through some of the reasons that the Trojans may not be as good as advertised. Scott, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me on.
So what do you think? Are you completely sold on the Trojans, semi-sold, not sold at all? What do you think?
There's no way I'm completely sold, especially, you know, I mean, when you talk about making the college football playoff, I think that's, you know, such a high bar for any team, and the margin of error is so slim. And then, you know, I look at USC, and they have weaknesses. There's, you know, they're not great by any standard, I don't think. They have a quarterback who's very good and very special. And, you know, I've covered the team for better or worse, I'll admit, since 1996. So I've seen Carson Palmer and Matt Leinart. And, you know, I do believe Sam Darnold is better than those guys. But there's other parts of the team that exist, too. So you can't just go off the quarterback. So they have issues, and I'll be happy to go over them if you want.
No, absolutely. Let's start, though, at the top. Have you seen in Helton a little bit of maybe the adult in the room? Do you think that he is, you know, if not the second coming of Pete Carroll, which is a lot of a stretch, but do you see Helton as having what it takes to be able to run this program successfully for the longer term?
Well, my philosophy on USC is it doesn't take much to run it successfully because USC is USC and it recruits itself. It has some of the best facilities in the nation. It's one of the richest programs in the nation in a location, you know, that attracts recruits. So I used to say if you had a mannequin coaching the team, it would do less damage than Paul Hackett, Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian. So the bar, I think, is fairly low. So he is the adult in the room, and he's running the program without drama. Now, I am no way going to compare him to Pete Carroll because he hasn't demonstrated anything to me other than the fact he's been able to coach a team that has Sam Darnold at quarterback.
Yep.
So if Sam Darnold, you know, God forbid, gets hurt in the game Saturday, they might be a 500 team because they're really not good at quarterback after Sam Darnold. Matt Fink is just a plug-in backup guy. Jack Sears is highly regarded, but they didn't even really give him enough snaps in training camp to compete for the backup job, and they threw him on the scout team this week. So, you know, I don't know who they wouldn't be better. I wrote in the paper this week. They wouldn't be better than probably, you know, four or five teams in the Pac-12 if Darnold got hurt. So Darnold makes everyone better, and no one benefits more than Clay Helton from that. So let's see what he does maybe next year if Darnold's playing in the NFL.
No doubt. So take me through the depth chart. If you're looking at the two deep, are there a few positions that you would circle as spots for people to keep an eye on?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the first thing you got to look at is receiver position. They've basically got three slot receivers starting right now: Jalen Green, Deontay Burnett, Steven Mitchell, who's coming up two knee operations. So that's a little surprising. Now they're going to rotate, you know, six, seven guys in. So I'm sure one of the younger guys will emerge. But right now in training camp, nobody really did among the younger receivers. So they're in a wait and see position. And, you know, to their benefit, Sam Darnold's going to make them all better because he's so good at just seeing the field and finding open guys. But he doesn't have a Juju Smith or maybe even a Darius Rogers right now. He's got Deontay Burnett, but other than that, I don't know that he's comfortable with the other guys. And then the offensive line has two new starters and a new left tackle, Toa Lobendon, who's good, but, you know, he really has been more of a center in his career, so they're flipping him over there because it's the most important position on the line. And then they have a new right tackle, Chuma Adoga, who didn't want to play left tackle, which kind of worries me that a guy like begged off playing left tackle after that's what he played all spring. So he's playing right tackle. So, you know, those are two very vital positions for Darnold because everything kind of revolves around him in my eyes.
Yep.
So that's
And Lobendon's coming off with two knee operations?
Yeah. There's probably going to be questions about if he can last the whole season because he's always been their best lineman when he's been healthy, but then he gets hurt. So that's a problem if he gets hurt. So they do have, you know, issues that I think are important because the line and receiver, you know, are directly linked to Sam Darnold.
For sure. Do you think that maybe they're more advanced on defense than offense at this point?
Yeah, I would say so based on the way they looked in scrimmages and, you know, probably coming out of a Rose Bowl, everyone thought, well, the offense is fine, but the defense will have some question marks. But, you know, the defense has, you know, their strength is probably on the edges with Porter Gustin and Uchenna and Wosu, and they're playing on the edge, and they've been probably the two most consistent defensive players. They have a big question at nose tackle. They're either going to start a guy who was a JC transfer, Josh Fatu, but they've also been playing a true freshman there because he's actually probably been better, but I don't think they have the nerve to just say we're going to start a true freshman in our first game of the season. So that's kind of Helton's way. He's not really a risk taker in that regard, and that's probably one reason I'm telling you there's three slot receivers because he's not going to come out and say, hey, I'm going to have a true freshman start at receiver the first game.
Right.
That's why he had Max Brown starting at quarterback last year. So he tries to go with the veteran at first if he can. The other big question, I think, is they have to replace Adoree Jackson in the secondary. And I was pretty critical of Jackson last year for giving up some touchdown passes. And, you know, he didn't have a great season in terms of playing defense, but he's still better than what they have now. So they're going to start Jack Jones at cornerback. And he had a really, really rough Rose Bowl if people watched him closely in that game. And then Ajene Harris is going to start at nickelback. And he played part-time last season and, you know, had some ups and downs. So I think when they go into the Pac-12 and, you know, they're playing those teams that'll pass 50 times a game, those two guys are going to be under the microscope.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And they need a kicker, right?
Yeah. Well, they may not need one because they may not kick many field goals, but they have two guys right now, Michael Brown and Chase McGrath. One, you know, I think his only big offer, Brown, was from Cal, which ought to tell you something because you know as well as anyone how pathetic Cal is. And then the other guy is a walk-on, so McGrath. So in training camp, you know, they each had their ups and downs. There were some days where they would miss, like, half the field goals in practice. So I think Brown is going to get the first crack, and then if he struggles, they're going to say, go to McGrath. But, you know, Helton even admitted in training camp they may not kick field goals, you know, outside of, say, 40 yards if one of these guys can't prove himself. So it's funny because, you know, they have John Baxter as a special teams coach,
yep.
And they always call him the best special teams coach in America. But these two kickers have a long way to go. And then, of course, Baxter's most famous moment as the best special teams coach in America was when Michigan fumbled the punt against Michigan State on the last play of the game and
right.
gave up a touchdown 2 years ago. So that's not probably the moment you want to have as your – most memorable if you're a special teams coach. But you know, let's say they're in a game with Washington and the, you know, in beautiful, what is it, Sunnyvale? What do you call
Santa Clara? Santa Clara, yes.
Santa Clara, sorry. My sister used to live in Sunnyvale, and it was down the street from the stadium, so I figured it was Sunnyvale. But
close enough.
Let's say they're playing there before 35,000 people, and I know they'd get a bigger crowd with USC and Washington. But Michael Brown has to kick a 47-yard field goal. I wouldn't be very confident right now that that's going to happen. And, you know, they beat Penn State on the last play because Matt Bormeister did kick a 47-yard field goal. So that's a loss right there.
Yeah. Yep, for sure. So I look at two kind of bigger dynamics. Tell me what you think of this. One is how quickly, especially offensively, will the, you know, the line and the receivers get up to speed relative to that September schedule, which is pretty difficult. And that game in Pullman, that's a Friday night game, right? In Pullman, I mean, Stanford,
yes,
Washington State, Texas, that is a difficult schedule, especially for a team with a, you know, a revamped line. So how quickly are those units going to get up to speed with the difficult early schedule? And the other question I had is no buys. Do you get a sense that they have been able to restock the depth to the point where a buy-less season can be managed pretty handily?
Well, I know Helton repeatedly has talked about how impressed he is with the team's depth. I am not as sold on the depth. I think, you know, they do have Austin Jackson is the backup left tackle. He's a true freshman, and he's going to be probably their next great lineman. I don't know if he's ready to play now if Loeb and Don gets hurt. And then I think at the other line positions, it's worse off because they have other guys that are not as highly regarded playing. So, you know, the line has to get up to speed, but it also can't get hurt. I think the big issue, too, is if guys get hurt in the secondary, that's going to be a big problem at corner, because I think in their eyes they have three corners right now that they like, and, you know, I have questions about a couple of them, but once you get past those three, you could be in trouble if one or two of those guys get hurt. And it seems like every season, and maybe this is true since I know you're the Pac-12 expert of experts these days, but maybe or self-proclaimed, right? But
no, not for sure, not that.
But you know, corners probably get hurt on every team every season because, you know, you can be out there for 70 plays a game and the team's passing maybe 50 plays or in some of these teams. So, you know, they have to go to Pullman, and how many passes is Washington State going to throw? And the thing that worries me on that, you know, they're going to play Cal the weekend before in Berkeley. So they have back-to-back road games on 6 days.
Yep.
So to me, that Washington State game is really like a complete trap game. And I think, you know, this might be something too, John, that you're more aware of than me, but I always feel like playing Washington State is harder. You know, I know they've had a horrible record, like winning their openers or beating Montana State or whatever, but I think it's harder to play them in September if you're a Pac-12 team because they're not as hurt or banged up, and they don't have the depth of a team like a SC. And if you play them in November, they might have, you know, some starters out and be worn down a little bit. So
a lot of truth to that, definitely.
I wouldn't want to play them in September if I was Clay Helton. And I don't know, that game to me, if I had to circle the first month, that's the game that kind of would concern me. And obviously I think Stanford, you know, they looked great the other night, and I know it's Rice, but they're so well coached. That's going to be a tough game too. So it's funny, you know, some people thought they have an easy schedule this year because last year seemed so tough, but this is going to be, I think, a challenge. They'll be favored in every game, but I think there's some definite pitfalls. And, you know, I haven't talked about the lack of buys, but that's where if they do get some injuries, you know, they're not going to get that week off to kind of get somebody to coach up or recover.
Right.
So, but you know what's going to happen, and I know you're going to cover that Pac-12 title game. If they win the South, there's going to be this big outcry because they're going to have a bye before the game. So the truth is, I think if you put Helton in an electric chair and asked him, do you want to buy during the regular season or would you rather have it at the end of the regular season? I'll bet he'd take the bye right before they play Washington in the Pac-12 title game.
Well, if the winner of that game is going to the playoff, that's an awfully nice spot to have that bye. There's no doubt about that. No doubt.
And I think Washington fans are going to go nuts if they play Washington complaining about that bye. And of course, I don't hear any complaints about Washington's schedule, which when I look at looks pretty unimposing, I'd say, at least even with the conference, the way they set it up.
Yep.
So I think they have a pretty nice path to that game.
Yeah, no, the Huskies, their fans would have no complaints, no reason to complain about that for sure. For sure. The back-to-back road games on the 6 days rest, that is tough. I think UCLA's got that with Seattle and Salt Lake. The Trojans have it, and one other team might have it. It is awfully difficult, especially when that second game is so far, as it would be for SC. That September is going to be tough, and if either, you know, when you're talking about qualifying for the playoffs and the non-conference results mattering, I mean, if either Texas or Notre Dame is good, then the schedule just becomes brutal.
Yeah, and they got to go to Notre Dame, and that's going to be a tough game. And I know it's not a league game, but if you lose that game in October, that has, you know, championship implications too. Because you know, you tell me, what do you think the scenario for the Pac-12? Let's say either team has two losses. Is that going to get them into the Final Four, just winning the conference? I don't know, but I'd be curious what you thought of that.
I would think only USC, of the two, USC would have the only chance because the schedule's so good. Washington, I don't think, would have any shot. I mean, if SC were to win the conference, and let's say they've got a, you know, a three-point loss in Pullman and a three-point loss in South Bend, and, you know, they've beaten Stanford and they've beaten Washington and they've beaten Texas, maybe if there's a openings created by somewhere else, but I don't see how there's any chance Washington's going to get into the playoff with two losses with that schedule. So
yeah. So and then what happens if they beat Washington by a field goal? I don't know. Does it matter?
It'll be interesting. Nobody's gotten in yet with two losses, but if you're going to do it, you got to have, you know, you got to have the schedule might. And SC would seem that SC would have that. Before I let you go, are there, since SC always ends up with two or three underclassmen who, you know, are just dynamite and people around the conference aren't familiar with their names, and then they see him playing, where did that guy come from? Are there two or three redshirt freshmen that you think fans should kind of be on the alert, especially fans from other schools?
Well, it's, you know, it's always easy to, if you want to talk about guys, you know, to look at a skill position. So I would say Stephen Carr, the tailback, has been pretty, I think he's been exceptional in training camp. He's a true freshman. I think he weighs about 210 pounds, and he has breakaway moves, and he's demonstrated them in camp. So, you know, I think I've been critical of them or talking about weaknesses with you most of this conversation, but the one area I would not be critical is at tailback, because they've got Ronald Jones and Stephen Carr. So you think about it, that's two guys who, Ronald Jones weighs about 205, So that's two guys who are over 200 pounds, but they're not like your typical plodding or physical, just physical tailbacks. They're both guys that can break, you know, a 50 or 60 yard run or more if there's a hole, or they can make the hole. So definitely, you know, I think they're going to like to run the ball, which is, you know, going to be really hard for some defenses, because you got to worry about Sam Darnold, and then you got to worry about Stephen Carr and Ronald Jones. So that's going to be fun to watch for the fans. I think, you know, that's one reason I focus on the receivers, because you look at a defense and you're thinking, well, maybe they can't beat us deep because they don't have anyone right now that can beat us deep. So we'll worry about stopping the run and maybe trying to stop Darnold from throwing those mid-range passes and challenge them, let them go deep on us, because that's the one area they haven't probably proven themselves at.
Right.
So, you know, the other thing is they do have a true freshman receiver named Joseph Lewis. Well, two true freshmen, Joseph Lewis and Randall Grimes. And they're both about 6'4", and Lewis looks kind of like built like Juju Smith already, even though he's a true freshman. And I suspect one of those two guys is going to end up breaking through. And, you know, I don't know if they'll have the guts to start them, but they're going to really be big-time guys, probably one of them by the end of the season, or a guy that Darnold likes to throw to for big plays. One guy that I'm high on that's kind of an under-the-radar guy is a tight end named Kerry Angeline. And he's 6'7", and he kind of reminds me of these guys Stanford always seems to get, and including now. You know, they always have like a – seems like they have a 6'7 tight end. And he's kind of interesting because when he catches the balls in practice, he kind of looks more like a wide receiver than a tight end. So – I think that's kind of a weapon they've never had, at least in the, over 10 years, a big, tall, rangy tight end. So, again, my question is, are they going to use them enough or utilize them when they should? Because a lot of times they have tight ends and they don't throw to them enough. So I'm really curious. You know, that's one thing Stanford's great at, is finding a way to get the ball to the tight end. So those three guys I mentioned because the fans, you know, don't want to hear about some offensive linemen because they're not going to pay attention when a game's on TV, or if it's on the Pac-12 network, they won't watch it anyways. But I don't even know if is USC on the Pac-12 network, maybe one time this year. So, you know, I would say those are the skill guys. But the Carr was rated the number 2 tailback in the nation coming out of high school, so it's no surprise,
right,
you know, that he's come in. And you know, I know Ronald Jones hasn't done anything wrong, but I've written in training camp, you know, wouldn't surprise me if Carr gets as many carries as Jones does in the games, because he's probably a better receiver than Jones is, and he just doesn't have 2 years' experience like Jones does.
Right.
So,
right,
you know, it's too bad they're not playing Washington in the regular season, because Washington's defense is so highly rated that I think it would be a great matchup to see them go against USC's offense. But I guess we'll have to hope that's what happens. But, you know, I'm an Oregon guy, too, so maybe Oregon will...
That's right.
I mean, I didn't go to Oregon, but I'm high on Oregon, so maybe they'll pull off some upsets. I noticed you trashed them in your preseason projections, though, so they don't have much chance of breaking through.
The Ducks, yeah, you know, I think I got them 6-6, which, of course, that means either 10-2 or 2-10.
Well, you have UCLA. I forgot to ask.
You know,
I
think the Bruins are going to have a good year. I think I picked them second in the South. One of those teams, between UCLA and the Arizona schools, one of those teams is going to bounce back. And I figured I'll go with the program that's got the quarterback. So I think UCLA could end up right in there behind the Trojans. In fact, I picked UCLA to win. I picked UCLA to win that game, the SC game. So, like 2006.
You pick UCLA to win that game every year.
Yep, 2006 all over again every year.
That way you're right every 10 years.
That's right. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I want to hear what you're going to say.
I was just going to say that we should mention that even though we did spend a fair amount of time kind of looking at potential problems with the depth chart, there's 10 other coaches at least, maybe 11, that would trade their roster for USC's and probably 125 around the country. So it's not like Helton is anybody should feel sorry for him, but I thought it would be a good counter to all the hype to just chat about, you know, what could end up leading them astray.
Well, they always managed to find a way to lose a game or two.
True.
I mean, even when Pete Carroll was there. So, you know, no, I always wonder, like, why should they ever lose any games in the Pac-12 when you look at their recruiting rankings? I mean, it's funny, you know, I don't know, we could trash recruiting rankings probably for hours, but I used to look and, like, Utah would have, I think, like, the 57th ranked recruiting class over the last 5 years, and then they would beat USC, who had, like, the 4th ranked recruiting class over the last 5 years. So I don't know how they lose to any of these teams. And, you know, Oregon never had recruiting classes that were ranked really high, and, you know, they were beating SC pretty regularly for a while there. So, you know, they really should dominate the conference. And that's why I say, you know, the coach, to me, you know, he has it made in a lot of ways. So it's hard to judge just how good a coach some of these guys really are. You know, I think that's like Sarkisian did a good job recruiting Washington, and then when they got a coach, you know, I think they started winning. So Chris Peterson is a good coach. So, and he had a lot of those players that Sarkisian recruited. So, you know, that was probably the best of both worlds. But, you know, I agree with you that UCLA game could be, you know, a potential loss. That would be a devastating loss, I would think, because if they lose to UCLA, even if they won the South, I would imagine losing that late in the season probably dashes your hopes of making the Final Four. But, you know, Josh Rosen has a lot to prove, too, because he was horrible against USC 2 years ago, and then he didn't play last year. So I doubt he wants his legacy to be, you know, I never did anything against USC in 3 years.
Right. Right. Well, and they got to prove that their offensive line can protect him, and they got to prove that they can actually run the ball for more than 2 yards per carry. So they certainly have got questions too. But it seems like most of the teams in the South do. I mean, Utah lost 4 offensive linemen. Colorado's got to replace most of their defense. The Arizona schools obviously have trouble. I think the South definitely is, there's a lot more spots up in the air. I think the general pecking order in the North seems a little bit more predetermined just in terms of the range of finishes. But I mean, anything could happen in the South to me other than USC not winning it.
Well, you know, the team that intrigues me in the South the most is Colorado, because, and only for one reason, I talked to Mike McIntyre, Pac-12 Media Day, and it wasn't a formal conversation. It was a more relaxed one. Because as you know, at Pac-12 Media Day, if you're not talking to USC or UCLA, there's no reporters talking to anybody else, pretty much. So you can have a relaxed conversation. And it's not like talking to Larry Scott, who won't say anything for 3 hours. But I was talking to McIntyre. He was pretty high on his defense. Well, he was pretty high on the whole team, but he talked about, you know, some JC guys they got and some redshirt guys, and he didn't sound, you know, coaches usually try to downplay everything or are cautious. He didn't sound that way talking about the defense. And, you know, of course they've got the quarterback Montez back. So I'm going to keep an eye on him, if only to see, like, if they can actually deliver on what he's saying, because I know everyone else thinks they're going to be like a 500 team this season. But, you know, I'm curious to see what they can do, because he didn't seem like he felt like, oh, we're just going to naturally, you know, lose a few more games than we did last season. And, you know, I think SC goes to Boulder, too. So
right.
That's another interesting, possibly interesting game on the schedule. That's the thing about the Pac-12 is, you know, every year we talk in July and August, and then by November, you look back at how completely wrong we were about assessing teams or who was surprising everybody. So, you know, one of these guys might emerge and be able to pull off an upset against USC.
Right, and it could end up being the game where SC doesn't think that that could happen, right? You kind of catch them looking ahead or coming off a big game, and it's that, you know, trap game, so to speak, that gets them.
Yeah, and the Pac-12, for some reason, always sends them to Boulder in November. So that's not a good time to go play in Colorado.
True. And UCLA was there in November, too, last year. It was that game with 30 personal fouls.
Yeah, I don't know why the Pac-12 does that all the time. I'm sure they have some double-talking explanation with their scheduling model or something. But it's always in November. And then for SC, I don't know about this year, but in the past, I think three times it's been a night game. So, you know, we've been there, and, like, they have the snow on the edge of the stadium or the field, but it's not on the field, and it's cold. So it's never, like, an ideal situation for a team from Southern California. So I don't know. That's a game, like, nobody's talking about right now.
True.
But, you know, who knows? It might be they had a tough game in Boulder a couple of years ago when Colorado was terrible, and Colorado's quarterback got hurt. And I think SC still beat them by, like, I don't know, one or two touchdowns. But it was a close game. So that's not necessarily an easy game. And it's funny because, you know, we all talked last year about, oh, they got to go to Seattle. They got to go to Seattle. And then they go to Seattle and just kind of dominated Washington in that game. So
yeah.
The one good thing I'll say, you know, I could rip the Pac-12 and the commissioner and all that stuff for weeks on end, but there is some element of surprise to what happens when football season starts. Maybe not in basketball, but at least in football, you do get some surprises. So, you know, I really like, I'm going to keep an eye on Oregon and Colorado. I'm kind of curious to see what those two teams can do. And somebody told me that Rocket Ismail picked Stanford to win the Pac-12. I don't know if you saw that or not, but
I didn't see that. And I didn't even know that Rocket Ismail did picking. Is he,
I only know that because somebody told me that on Twitter. So, you know, their Twitter is always correct.
Yeah.
So,
well, yeah. Hey, they would not be that surprising to me if either Stanford or Washington State won the North. Really, I picked Washington, but Stanford and Washington State both have enough coming back to be able to, you know, if the Huskies stumble a little bit, sure, I could see that. I just can't see anybody else winning the South. That's the thing.
I was going to ask you, what did you think of they announced today this idea of trying to shorten the length of some of the games this season? And had you heard that was coming down earlier? And, you know, what was your idea on that?
You know, I heard he said something about that at Media Day during his remarks about trying to find ways to shorten the games, you know, shorten the dead time to help not only help the speed of the game, but help the fan experience. And they talked about how the British Open had done kind of a picture-in-picture thing, showing the action but also showing an advertisement and how, you know, maybe they would try to implement that. I mean, I talked to a couple coaches who said they don't need all the time that's allocated for halftime. They need 12, 14 minutes, and then they're ready to go. And the rest of the time, it's standing around. So I think the coaches were probably are probably going to be on board in terms of trimming halftime.
I thought the ironic part to me was that the shortening of the games is going to be for the games that are on the Pac-12 network. And the rare times I've covered games, USC games that were on the Pac-12 network, those games flew by anyways because it seems like they have less commercials or less timeouts or whatever. So, you know, let's see that happen on a Fox game that takes, you know, 4 hours to show.
Yeah, no, it's not going to happen on Fox or ESPN games, that's for sure. And I don't think it's happening in conference games either. I think it's only non-conference for this year. It's only non-conference games that are on the Pac-12 network, and what 95% of those are Pac-12 against FCS, and most of those aren't close in the fourth quarter, so you can just run the clock, you know.
So that big Montana Washington game will have a shorter halftime.
Right. The other thing they're going to try to do is, so you know how like a 3 o'clock or there's not many three, a 5 o'clock game or 7:30 game actually starts at 5:08 or 7:38. They have that lead, that bumper time for TV. They're going to trim that to just 1 or 2 minutes. So a 7:30 game would start at 7:31 or 7:32, and they think that that will help. That plus shortening halftime right there is like 12 minutes.
Yeah, I like those ideas. I mean, I won't see them firsthand, I guess, but
probably not.
I do think those are good good ideas.
Absolutely. And especially for the night games, because it does make a difference if the game ends at, you know, 10:45 as opposed to 11:05, or it ends at 11 instead of 11:20. I mean, that amount of time makes a huge difference that late at night.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, I know they have their reasons, but you can't have games ending that late at night. And I really hate, you know, when they pick on one school. Like, I know a few years ago, Oregon State had like 9 night games or some crazy thing like that.
And Cal had it last year, yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, it was atrocious what they did to Cal last year when they had that game at the Coliseum. I think it was on a Thursday.
Yep.
Was it Thursday or Friday?
It was a Thursday game. Right. Cal had played the previous Friday at home against Oregon and gone. It was like 52-50. And then they played at SC on a Thursday night.
And USC had a bye the week before.
Yep.
And I still remember Larry Scott, you know, walking into that press box and trying to explain it to us, and, you know, it made zero sense. And I think they were so lucky it was Cal that it happened to, because if it had happened to UCLA or SC or, you know, Washington or Washington State, you know, those schools would have definitely said something publicly about it. So, you know, and then last year, I don't know if you remember this, because I know you used to cover Arizona. SC had to go to Tucson, and I think it was like a 12 p.m. kickoff. It was like 105 degrees. So, you know, that was the famous game. I don't know if you saw the picture. We took pictures of the entire stadium, the side opposite the press box. And I think it looked like there were about 1,000 people in there in the third quarter.
Yep.
So, you know, and I asked him about that too, and he gave an answer that made no sense at all about why they're playing at noon kickoff in Tucson. So,
well, that was October, right?
Middle
of the season.
It was like early October.
Early October.
But. Yeah. He made some comment about, well, we don't play September games in the daytime in Tucson. I was like, well, you don't think it gets hot in October in Tucson? So, just, I mean, I don't know. It was, I don't even know how the players survived that game, to be honest with you. But they make some incredible choices. And it's funny because it seems to me like every time I watch Michigan, they're playing at the exact same time on Saturday every week. And, you know, they say, they said last year, well, we're not going to play Friday games or Thursday games when they go to that for the Big 10. So it's different. I guess that's the best way you can put it. I think it's ridiculous in a lot of ways, but, you know, the schools here all, there's a lot of SC fans I still hear from who are upset that Pat Hayden went along with you know, the Pac-12 changes and kind of, you know, didn't they wanted him to assert more authority and independence, but they wanted, you know, USC and UCLA to kind of try to grab more power or retain more power, however you want to look at it, when they had the expansion. But yeah.
Well, the, you it know, is the, he, true. The presidents view things differently, though. The presidents are much more collaborative in how, you know, get in the give and take and not making extreme demands. And Larry certainly worked through the presidents on that and not the athletic directors. And part of the problem that they have with the schedule now is that the athletic directors were not as involved in that negotiations with ESPN and Fox as they should have been, because I think that some alarms would have gone off in terms of how much flexibility the conference was giving away regarding football scheduling and kickoff times. There you go. Well, I appreciate it for sure. Thanks a ton for the, especially for the insight on USC.
And oh, will, anytime. And I hope I see you next week.
You will. I will be there. Should be a good game.
Should be. Yeah, I think that's going to be a great game.
All right. Thank you very much, Scott.
All right. Thanks, Josh.
All right. Take care, man. See ya.